I'm Bob Main, and I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode 321 of the Handgun World Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This is a practical show done by a practical guy like me. I'm going to spend a little bit of time this week talking about accuracy. I've done it before, but I received what I thought was an excellent email from a listener. So it inspired this episode, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that later. However, I also got a voicemail that I want you to listen to. And by the way, folks, if you want to leave me a voicemail message to comment on the show or to ask me a question or just say hi or whatever, the voicemail number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or you can go to handgunworld.com and you can click the call me button that is on my website. That'll hook you up as well. But let's listen to this voicemail I got from a listener first.
All right, it's May 23rd. Texas just passed, or the Texas Senate just passed the open carry side of the law. I guess the Texas House passed it here a little while back, and now I guess it's got to go back and forth to the House and then to the governor. My question for Bob is, what's your take on this? Because I was reading it, and apparently the big argument was a cop cannot just walk up and ask you to see your concealed carry or your carry permit now, that he has to have a probable cause other than that you're carrying a weapon. I personally think that a cop should be able to walk up and ask you to see your permit. You do not have to speak with him. He just needs to show him your permit, and that be it. But I want to get your take on it, Bob, and thanks for everything you do.
And thank you, Joe, for calling that in. Well, now, today is May 30th at the time of this recording. And what I can tell you so far in response to Joe's email is open carry has now cleared the entire Texas legislature. So Governor Greg Abbott says open carry just passed in both the Texas House and the Senate. Next destination, my pen. Governor Abbott is definitely signing that. He's always said emphatically he's signing it. Now, the amendment was stripped. And so basically now this law does not allow a law enforcement officer to approach you and ask to see your license because you're open carrying. For those of you who don't know, Texas is going to pass licensed open carry. So only people with a CHL license, one of these, really technically unconstitutional licenses that we have, because technically, if you think about it, the Constitution says nothing about having to get a license to carry a firearm, to bear an arm. It doesn't say anything about getting a license. It says the people have the right to keep and bear arms. But that is a whole other subject that I have talked about before. So since we do in many states have to pretty much get permission, and I know Texas is a shall issue state, so we don't have to get a lot of permission here. And at least one of the things I like about what Texas does is we don't make you ask for a lot of permission. Basically, if you are of age, you do not have a felony record, and you take a four-hour class, boom, you got your concealed handgun license. And it's only a four-hour class now instead of eight. And I think it might have been even more at one time. But anyway, there was an amendment in this open carry bill that would allow law enforcement officers to basically say, hey, let me see your permit. You're open carrying, let me see your permit. That is not going to be part of the law. They basically, here's the way I understand it. I could be wrong. Set me straight if I'm wrong. Send me a voicemail or an email. Tell me if I'm wrong. But because this amendment was stripped from it, law enforcement officers cannot just go up and approach you and say, let me see your CHL. You're open carrying a handgun. Now, Joe in his voicemail says he thinks that police officers should be able to do that. I would like to very respectfully disagree with Joe. I do not believe that a law enforcement officer should have the right to just go up to you and ask to see your concealed handgun license just because you are open carrying. Now, currently the way it is in Texas is you must inform the officer that you have a CHL if you are approached and asked by an officer. Normally it's for a different reason, like if it's a traffic stop or something like that, and he's pulled you over and he's asked for insurance and ID, then you have to notify him that you have a CHL, show him your license, and tell him that you are carrying if you are carrying. That, I think, is a little bit different because that pertains to our current law that we have right now for concealing handguns. And the CHL license program, that's the way it's set up, that CHL holders have to notify. So I guess this sort of contradicts that a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, you can open carry and you don't have to notify. And according to this amendment, the police officer cannot approach you and ask you for your license. Now, if you're doing something else that the police officer stops you for, if there's another cause, if it's a traffic stop or you're doing something disorderly, or there's another reason why the police officer wants to stop you, question you, ask you for your ID, whatever, then I think it's okay for him to also ask for your CHL license because you are open carrying. And in this state, once it passes, you're going to have a license, your CHL license to open carry. That's my view on that. I think it's a very slippery slope that we would be on, one we really don't want to be on because we have anti-gun police officers out there. Maybe many of the police officers who listen to my show are not anti-gun. I would assume that you're not. If you're listening, right? I assume you're not. But there are quite a few of them, even here in Texas. And I could see this really being a problem when you have an anti-gun police officer that sympathizes with the anti-gun movement and sees someone open carrying and just goes up and basically, for no real good reason, is sort of bothering the law-abiding citizen who is lawfully carrying his or her firearm. I could see that abused, and that's one thing I don't like about it. So my opinion, Joe, is I'm glad that that amendment was taken out of the bill. By the way, January 1, 2016 is when it's going to take effect. So we still got 7 months left before we can start open carrying here in Texas. It still hasn't been signed by the governor yet, but it's cleared all of the legislative hurdles. And the only thing it has left to do is to go to the governor's desk for his signature and become law on January 1, 2016. So, Joe, there you have it. Like I said, I very respectfully disagree. Now, some of you, I know maybe I might have opened up a can of worms here. Haven't I? You tell me, did I just step in it, folks? Well, we'll see. We'll see what my email inbox says and my voicemail. Let's see if it starts blowing up and I start getting hammered. I don't know. But if you want to email me, bob@handgunworld.com. That's bob@handgunworld.com. Voicemail me, 210-646-1727. Okay. Let's get out of the main topic. I want to take a quick break, and then we'll get right on to the main topic that I want to talk about.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat at 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
During the break, I want to quickly mention a few things. Don't forget about some of the upcoming classes we have. They're getting full. They're getting full. Ben and I have been selling out our classes lately. Thank you very much for all of the support that you give us, folks. I very much appreciate that. So, coming up in August, for those of you out in the Washington and Oregon area, I've been talking about it for a long time. We are flying into Seattle. We're flying into SeaTac Airport, driving out to SQUIM on the Olympic Peninsula. And we're going to be at Fort Discovery again in SQUIM, Washington, August 8th and 9th. And we're going to be teaching with Glenn Tate and one or two members of his team. Glenn Tate being the author of the book series, 299 Days. So Ben and I are going out there, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. It is a two-day class. It is a two-day class, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. There are still spots left available in the bunkhouse. Great bunkhouse that Joe, the owner of Fort Discovery, has there. It's really, really cool. You're going to really like it. Free lodging. How can you beat that? I think there's probably three or four spots left for people to sign up, and you get free lodging with your tuition for the class. And then we're going to Ohio. We're going to the Canton area in Ohio in September. And let's see, the exact dates I'm going to tell you, I'm pretty sure, are September 19th and 20th. Yes, they are. In Dover, Ohio, we're going to the Zora Road Gun Club. And that's also Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. That's also a two-day class, Saturday and Sunday. And then in November of this year, and that's coming sooner than you think, folks, we are teaching Level 2, the advanced class of Beyond Concealed Carry. We're going to be getting into some advanced techniques. So those of you in Texas who have taken our class, well, even if you're not in Texas, if you want to travel, come do it, whatever. If you've taken Beyond Concealed Carry or at least another class that is a decent training class, we'll recognize that. Come to our advanced class. Chaz Murray from the Road Gunner podcast and Tracy Thronberg, a Mag 40 staff instructor, will be joining us as co-instructors. There'll be four of us teaching, and it's going to be a two-day class. It's going to be awesome. Saturday the 21st and Sunday the 22nd of November. It is the weekend before Thanksgiving, and that's going to be at a place to shoot in San Antonio. A terrific range for this, an excellent facility. The people at a place to shoot always treat us and the students very well. So check all that out. Go to handgunworld.com. There are new videos going up on the Shooters Club very, very soon. We just put one up a few weeks back. There's over 35 videos and 9 audio podcasts. If you support us for $75 a year, $8 a month, you can support us for $75 a year or $8 per month. You can access all of the videos and the audio podcasts on the Shooters Club. You can just go to shootersclubmembers.com or go to handgunworld.com and click the Shooters Club page. Last but not least, please don't forget to support me on my Amazon store. So many of you do that. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, you don't have to spend any extra money to support the Handgun World podcast. You don't have to spend any more money. If you're going to buy something on Amazon anyway, the price is the same if you just click on my Amazon store off my website. Go to handgunworld.com, click on the Amazon store, and make your purchases that way, and the show, my show, will benefit. I'm a member of the Amazon Associates program, and I will earn a little bit of a commission for that. Okay, that's it for the break, and real quick sound effect or PSA or something, and then we'll get right into the main topic.
80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Dianne Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in two other homicides. These two items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
All right, for the main topic, I want to address an email. And all I'm going to do is use this man's first name because I haven't had a chance to get his permission yet. But his, you know, his name is John, and he sent me this email. So, you know, because his name is John, I guess that probably pretty much reduces everything down to like about, what, 12, 13 million people? I don't know, maybe that, you know what, that'd be interesting. How many Johns are there out there? Anyway, John sent me a really good email. And I want to share this with you. Normally, I don't respond to emails on the air because I just get so many of them. But this one really got a hold of me, and it gave me the inspiration here for this episode. And it's about accuracy. And so that's why I decided to talk about this, because it is about accuracy. And John makes some real good points here. I'm not going to read you word for word because it is a long email, but I'm going to paraphrase. John says, Bob, first of all, let me say that I frequently listen to your podcast, whether I agree or disagree. Well, thank you, John. I appreciate that very much. He says, you're a knowledgeable and practical guy, and you've given me food for thought in many of your podcasts that have helped me grow. And he says he's been carrying concealed for about 12 years, and he's fairly active in shooting, and says he has been since he was about 10 years old. So, he says, for many years, while talking to people in the know and watching TV and reading forums and watching YouTube and listening to podcasts like mine, he hears hundreds of people use the word accuracy to describe the quality of a gun. I've done that. Now, he says, unless someone's trying to sell a particular product, the phrase accuracy of the gun has no place in almost all conversations. He says, I guess I kept this irritation to myself until one day I was turned on to Hickok 45's channel. And by the way, if you like to watch YouTube videos on guns, I highly recommend Hickok 45. The man is wonderful. But John says in his email, it didn't take me long to become hugely respectful of the man's raw brilliance. He's talking about Hickok 45, and he's right. And in the art of handling any type of gun. Yeah, Hickok 45 can shoot anything, man. He's good. And he was excited to hear Hickok 45 recently do an episode on accuracy. He says, I was prepared to once again go away irritated with the same old crap about how accurate this gun is compared to this other one and blah, 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 blah. But behold, he was listening to Hickok 45. And he says he now respects with far more experience than a man he respects with far more experience than he has. So, John says in his email, he thinks it is wrong to tell an audience of one or hundreds of thousands that, wow, this has got to be the most accurate gun ever shot compared to something else. Or he thinks it's wrong to say something like, well, I shot a lot of guns and this one's by far the most accurate. And, you know, we do hear that. I said that last episode about the H&K VP9 that I got to shoot. One of the students brought it to class, and I got to shoot it and said, wow, this thing is accurate. I'll get to that in a minute. John says, I didn't think this gun was nearly as accurate as another, or this gun is so accurate it makes me look good. Apparently he does. John doesn't like that. He doesn't like it when people say that. Now, John makes a real good point here. He says, unless you put the gun along with others in a vise, lock it down, point it at the target at exactly the same spot with the same ammo, can you truthfully tell the inherent accuracy of a gun? My answer to that is no, you can't. And I'm going to get to that. I'll expand on that in a little bit. He says, if you don't believe you would see much of a variance between any of the guns ranging from $400 to $4,000, he said he doesn't believe he would see much variance in that. I'm not so sure if I 100% agree, but I'm going to get to that too. John says, truth is, Most all guns, regardless of what they are or how much they cost, are more accurate than the shooter will ever be. True. I believe that. Honestly, he says, I'd even have a tough time believing Rob Lethem if he told me that one gun is more accurate than another. And, you know, that's interesting because, you know, Rob Lethem's the kind of guy that can probably shoot anything accurately. I mean, literally anything because he's that good. Jerry Mikulek, same thing. They're just that good. John sums this up. He finishes the email by saying, Bob, I'm writing this to you because in quite a few of your podcasts, I not only hear you, but many of your guests say the same type of accuracy comments. Okay, and he says, Bob, I chose to pick on you because I really do enjoy your podcast. Well, thank you very much, John, and I really enjoy you as a listener, and I really enjoyed this email. You see, folks, I don't mind you sending an email, taking me to task on something, or criticizing me as long as it's constructive. And this was well thought out. I responded to John. I said, look, that was well thought out. I agree with you on a lot of this stuff. Some of it I don't. But you know what? It was well thought out. And so I decided to make this the main topic of this episode. Let me say a few things about that. Let's go back to inherent accuracy. And John says, John says he does not believe that he would see much more variance between any of the guns from $400 to $4,000. In terms of inherent accuracy, in other words, in terms of what the gun will do, I think there is a difference, although it's very slight. I think there's a difference between a $479 Glock or M&P or XD and a $3,500 Wilson Combat 1911 or Nighthawk 1911. Yes, I think there's a slight inherent accuracy there. Those expensive guns are just built to shoot more accurately, which is one of the reasons why they cost more money. Now, does that mean it translates to shooter accuracy? No. No, it doesn't. And maybe that's what John's talking about here in this email. I do not believe that automatically transfers to shooter accuracy. Here's my point. I have been to IDPA matches, USPSA matches, where someone's using a very expensive gun. I've seen Wilson Combats, I've seen Nighthawks, I've seen STIs, I've seen very expensive 1911s, I've seen very expensive H&Ks. That, let me tell you what, in the hands of a shooter that is not very good, I've seen somebody outshoot them with a Glock 19. I mean, just because someone's holding a $4,000 custom finely tuned firearm in their hand does not make them an accurate shooter. I've seen them at a match fall apart. The shooter, I mean. Well, and I've seen a lot of those guns choke too. But the actual shooter, I've seen the shooter just fall apart and lose it, even though he has a very, very expensive gun that is meant to be accurate. So perhaps that's what John means here. And yes, it is kind of disingenuous for someone like me or anybody else to say to another person, boy, this gun's really accurate. You got to get this. It's much more accurate than that Glock, and you need to use that. Maybe not so. Because, I mean, I've seen people with a Glock 19, like I said, boy, they've come to class, or I've trained with them at other classes, and they're amazing. I mean, they're amazing accurate shooters with that Glock 19. And I've seen them far outshoot what they call more expensive, finely tuned firearms. Yes, I've seen that, and I've seen that a lot. Perhaps that's what John means in this email when he's talking about practical accuracy. He did say that each individual shooter has many variables that come into play that make them more or less accurate with one gun over another. Yeah, that's true. That's really true. How the gun fits your hand. How the trigger feels to you. You know, triggers. I mean, a trigger is a huge part of a gun's accuracy. Huge. Now, some people can shoot some triggers real well, and some can shoot them not so well. Some people just can't shoot a double-action-only trigger. Some people can't shoot a double-action, single-action trigger, like me. I can't shoot a DASA trigger. Some people just, with that single action, with the beautiful single action trigger of a 1911, some people, that just really helps them shoot a lot better. And some people with a 1911 platform gun, it just seems to line up better for them. Some not. Glocks don't bother me with their grip angle and their trigger. I'm used to it. I can shoot it. I've shot so many thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds through my Glocks. I'm good with them. And I've outshot people with finely tuned expensive guns before with a Glock 19 or 17. Smith & Wesson M&Ps. Boy, the trigger's really improved on the M&Ps. Smith & Wesson on the M&Ps, these that are being made today, the triggers are a lot better. And, of course, a lot of people get Apex triggers and other things and aftermarket parts and put them in there and make the trigger wonderful. And for some people, the M&P fits their hand so much better, or the XD fits their hand so much better, that, yes, practical accuracy improves. How about the Springfield XDM? For some people, that's a, you know, that gun they love. Some people don't like the texture. Some do. But for some people, that gun just makes it more accurate. And let me tell you what, the XD is got a nice trigger on it. So yeah, I mean, you know, if you put an XDM 9mm 5-inch barreled gun in Rob Leatham's hands, and you put a $3,500 Nighthawk into my hands, who do you think's gonna win? Rob Leatham's gonna kick my butt. He's gonna outshoot me like crazy. Yeah. And my gun would be $3,500 and his would be $550. And, you know, and then for Rob to say, well, this gun's a lot more accurate than that 1911 you have, that would be disingenuous because Rob Leatham is that good. However, the gun he's shooting is would be pretty good too. The XDMs are a good, accurate gun. You know, and for the intended purpose of a defensive handgun. Now, again, I've been talking up to this point about defensive handguns that you're going to use to save your life with. Hopefully that day never comes, but if you choose to use it. You know, how much accuracy do you need? I mean, you think about it. You know, you think about it. I've gone over many times that a fight is not going to be a static stand still and fire away at each other. You have to be, you know, if your gun will only do 3-inch groups at 25 yards, only? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? I mean, if the inherent accuracy of your pistol is 3 inches at 25 yards, well, if you got to shoot somebody at 25 yards in self-defense, which, boy, you better be real careful. You better really be able to articulate a very strong case that you were acting in self-defense. What's wrong with 3 inches at 25 yards? What's wrong with 3.5 inches? At 25 yards. First of all, I got a question for you. Can you shoot 3-inch groups at 25 yards? You know, like, let's talk about like Wilson Combat 1911s. They come with what? Like a 2-inch guarantee, 2 inches at 25 yards or something like that, or some 1911s, is it Les Bears or Ed Browns, something like a couple of inches or 2.5 inches at 50 yards or whatever. It's great. They got these guarantees and the guns will do that, but can the shooter do it? And will the shooter have time? Will you really have time to be able to line up a couple of shots and put them within a couple inches of each other at 25 yards? I mean, think about that. Are you really going to do that? Do you really need in a defensive situation to have a firearm that will do that? Now, there's nothing wrong if you got a gun like that. Trust me. Nothing wrong. You got a really expensive, finely tuned SIG H&K, some kind of a 1911 that will give you those groups, that is wonderful. Have at it, carry it, use it, defend your life with it, practice with it like crazy, give it a 1,000 round, maybe a 2,000 round trigger job, go out there and run with it and bet your life on it as long as it's reliable and it'll do what you want it to do. All I'm saying is yes, inherently, in other words, mechanically, a gun like that is probably going to be more accurate than, say, a polymer striker-fired pistol, but I have seen people totally suck with those expensive guns. Yeah, I said that. I've seen people totally suck in their accuracy with an expensive gun, and I've seen people with a modestly priced firearm do extremely well. You know, one that comes to mind is the SR series, the Ruger SR series. It wasn't this last class, it was a different class. Somebody came, Some shooter had a Ruger SR9. He was great with that gun. Great with that gun. And what is it? $440, $450 or something like that? And, you know, does a gun like that have enough, quote, accuracy to defend your life? Yeah, sure it does. We all know that most handgun defensive uses, most DGUs with a handgun, they're going to be, how many times have we all said this? Right? They're going to be 2 or 3 yards away, out to maybe a maximum of 7 or 8, maybe 10 yards, just kind of stretching it. For probably 99 to 98% of the cases that you're going to need. Now, if you want supreme, superb accuracy, go get your AR-15. All right? You know, or your AK, because those can actually be shot pretty well, too. That's another thing that bothers me. People call an AK is inaccurate. Really? Okay, I've heard people say, well, your AK only does 4 inches at 100 yards. Think about that now. 4 inches at 100 yards. First of all, what's the likelihood? You know, hey, folks, most of us are listening to this are private citizens. Most of us are not in Afghanistan. Most of us are not in foreign countries fighting for our country. For those of you, by the way, listening to this show who are in the military, who are in foreign lands fighting for our country, or even those of you who are here, stationed here in the United States, you're all taking part in something, and I absolutely salute you. Thank you. We just recently had Memorial Day weekend, and I remembered all of the people in my family and other families who paid the ultimate price to give us this freedom. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. But unless you're one of those and you're just a private citizen, a 100-yard shot seems a little on the unrealistic side to me, or the far unlikely side. So if you have an AK rifle, for example, and you can shoot that 4-inch groups at 100 yards, I think that's probably pretty good enough. That's probably very much good enough accuracy to be able to stop the bad guy from doing whatever he was doing to you at 100 yards. I'm trying to think of things. There are things, I guess, probably that would warrant you pulling the trigger on an AK or an AR-15 at 100 yards, but not very many. Not very many. And I do like the fact that Hickok 45 on his YouTube videos, I do like the fact that he's got that range with all those steel targets on his property, and he's popping those long range. I think they're 50 or 70 or 75 yards. He knows the distances, and if you listen to him, or if you watch his videos, he'll say, oh, look at this one out here. Let's shoot that one. It's like 80 yards, and bing, 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 you know, he's shooting it. So I really admire that. You should practice that. You should practice long range shooting with your handgun. We teach it. I know that Suarez International folks are very big on teaching long-range accuracy. Many of the courses I've taken with John Payne, there's another guy, by the way, that can shoot a handgun accurately. Wow. John Payne, Tier 1 Suarez International staff instructor. This guy can take snubby revolvers, car PM9s, Glock 43s, and this guy can ring steel plates that aren't very big. He can ring those things at 50 yards with regularity. So my hat's off. And you know, you take a guy like John Payne and you stick pretty much just any kind of firearm in his hand and he can be accurate enough. So maybe that's what John, who sent me this email, is talking about. So yeah, I agree with some of his points and respectfully disagree with others, but because of this email, I am going to try to shy away from saying that a certain gun is more accurate than another gun. Because even if I say it's more accurate than another gun, maybe that was just for me. Maybe for me it was more accurate than another firearm. But for the next person, it might not be. For the next person, it might not be any more accurate. So, yeah, there you go. And John, I hope, first of all, I thank you again for your email. I hope that I got the essence of it, and I wanted to share this with the listeners because I'd like to find out what are your thoughts on accuracy? How do they compare with mine that I've just talked about here in the main topic? So I'd like to hear from you. Send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. You can voicemail me, 210-646-1727. You can throw a comment up You can put a Facebook comment up there. My Facebook page, if you search Handgun World Podcast, you can go to the podcast Facebook page. You can find me at Handgun World on Twitter. Or just go to Handgun World and leave a comment underneath this episode. There's all kinds of ways that you can do it. And I always start a thread on Facebook about every episode that I do. Okay, that's it for the main topic. I do have another topic that I want to discuss. So, quick break, and I'll get to that. How can people be so blind? Not know what freedom means. Don't you tread on the Constitution. Don't take my liberty. All right, to conclude this episode, I've got to talk to you about something that happened to me recently. Personal story here for you. This was very recently. I think I went to the grocery store, and I was coming back from the, it was either the grocery store or the drugstore, just a few miles from my house. And when I got home, I pulled into my neighborhood and I pulled into my driveway. And I wasn't paying attention as much as I should. Now, I was carrying, okay? So when you hear this story, it's going to be a good thing that I was carrying, because, you know, I mean, I carry all the time. And here's one of the reasons why I'm going to share with you. You should carry all the time. So I pull in my driveway, put my car in park, put on the parking brake, throw open the door. First of all, I made a critical mistake, and I let my situational awareness weaken a little bit. And I just threw open the door and started exiting the vehicle without looking around first, without checking, looking to the left, looking around my car, the front and rear. Bad move. So within a second or two after I open my door, I hear, hey, 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 hey. And there's somebody talking to me. And whoa. So my stress level instantly went up, and I whipped my head around, and there was a man standing about 8 to 9 feet, maybe 10 feet at the most, to my left and slightly behind my vehicle. And I was still sitting in the driver's seat of the car. And he proceeds. Now, he's on my property, by the way. I'm in my driveway, and he's in the grass to the side of the driveway, but he's still on my property. He begins to chew me out, telling me that I was driving too fast in the neighborhood. Now, first of all, I doubt it. I doubt that I was driving too fast in our residential neighborhood. I live in the suburbs. I live in a residential suburb of San Antonio, Texas. But he's chewing me out. Says, well, hey, you know what? You're driving too fast through here. You need to slow down. My daughter's deaf, and you're driving too fast. And I saw you turn down this street, and I saw you turn down that street. And you got to remember, there's kids around here, and you're driving too fast, and my daughter's deaf. And he kept repeating, my daughter's deaf, my daughter's deaf, my daughter's deaf, you know, 4 or 5 different times. And I thought, well, I'm thinking to myself, I didn't say this. First of all, I'm just kind of agreeing with him. I'm trying to de-escalate the guy, because his voice started to get louder and more high-pitched as he was talking to me. So I really realized that, you know, instead of pulling my gun on him, he's on my property, all right? So in the state of Texas, if I pull my gun on this guy, I'm not going to get in trouble, because I'm going to tell this guy to get off. Get off my lawn! You know, it's probably best to say get off my lawn first, give him a warning. But, you know, anyway, Texas is pretty lenient for property owners to do that such stuff. But, you know, we shouldn't be doing that, folks. We shouldn't be using our gun to solve problems. We need to be using our head to solve problems. We need to try to de-escalate, try to fix the situation with our head first. Then, if you can't fix it with your head and the gun's your last resort, keep yourself alive or a family member alive, of course, use it. So I'm trying to de-escalate this guy. So first of all, I was just kind of, when he was telling me I was driving too fast, I'm thinking, okay. And I'm saying to him, okay, all right, yeah, okay, all right, yeah. And I'm just, you know, saying, okay, sorry, I'm sorry, yeah, sorry about that. And again, I think he's full of BS. I was not driving too fast. I make it very clear. As a matter of fact, my wife says, I've never seen you drive too fast through our neighborhood. And I don't think I was driving too fast. But anyway, he thought I was. And he had the audacity. I mean, you talk about some chutzpah. This guy, to get out of his truck, park it, you know, near my driveway, walk up to me, and approach me 10 feet away as I'm getting out of my vehicle? Whoa, that takes some guts to do that, especially here in Texas. So this whole thing lasted, I don't know, hard to tell, 30 seconds maybe? And finally, I was able to de-escalate the situation, and he started to walk away from me, turned his side to me, started heading back towards his truck, still chewing me out for driving too fast. Well, the way this whole thing ended is basically I got out of my car, I stood up, I did have the whole time, I was carrying my Smith & Wesson shield on my right hip, by the way. And the whole time I had my hand on my right hip, covering the gun. The shirt was covering the gun, and my hand was ready to pull up my shirt and draw the gun if I had to. So it would have been a real quick draw for me if I had to do that. Because all I would have had to, I mean, like I said, my hand was already back there ready to draw anyway. And I don't think he knew I had a gun. In fact, I'm positive he didn't know I had a gun, and he probably just thought I was putting my hand on my hip just because that's what a lot of people do. And I was able to stand up, and I was able to follow him back to his truck, keeping my distance. And I kept saying to myself, Bob, distance is your friend. Distance is your friend. Distance is your friend. You got to keep your distance. Got to keep your distance. And I did. And see, this is where training starts to take over. You will, in a stressful situation, folks, you will do what you're trained to do, plain and simple. Again, I'll say it again. You'll do what you are trained to do. So I walked him back to his truck. And believe it or not, the man continued to chew me out as he gets back into his pickup truck, rolls the window down, continuing to let me have it. And then he drove off. And I thought to myself, you know what? Man, here's why I got to keep carrying my gun all the time. I live in a decent neighborhood. Nothing ever happens in decent neighborhoods, right? Wrong. Just because you live in a decent neighborhood, don't get lazy, folks. Carry your gun. This man would have eaten some 9mm, what am I carrying right now in my shield? This man would have eaten 9mm, 124 grain federal HST. Yeah, I got plus P. I got 124 grain plus P federal HSTs in my shield right now. He'd have been eating some of these if he would have got even a foot closer and threatened me even more. Okay? Or at least this gun would have come out of the holster and he would have seen it. And my finger would have been indexed right on the ejection port, ready to drop down and press the trigger if I needed to. And my gun definitely would not have been fully extended because that would have not been nearly enough space between me and him. That gun would have been at the retention level, or at the retention part of the draw, excuse me. Out of the holster, pointed towards the bad guy, hold it in tight towards my right side, and I would have been point shooting from retention as I have been trained to do. Makes it much more difficult for this guy to go for my gun and get it away from me too. And see, all this stuff is going through my head. It's all going through my head. And it all went through my head in like 5 to 10 seconds. You know, what am I going to do? So, you know, lesson learned. Carry your gun, people. Ben Branham just did a podcast episode on his Modern Self-Protection podcast about carrying your gun. And it was weird. I think I listened to that podcast 2 days before this happened to me. And I thought, whoa, man, Bob, don't ever, 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 ever get lazy. And so those of you listening to this, don't get lazy. Carry your gun. And even if you pocket carry a little .380, and when you get out of your vehicle, don't just blindly get out of your vehicle like I did, and I made the mistake, and I'll admit it, I made the mistake just blindly whipping open the door. Don't do that. Don't do that. Look around. Heighten your situational awareness a little bit. These days, you've got to do that. I'm sorry. It's the way, it's the place we live in right now. Okay? I should have heightened my awareness. I should have looked around. I would have seen him. I'd have seen him before I whipped through open the door of my car, which would have been better. All right? So, at least I could have been a lot more ready for what was going on. And by the way, in that situation, if I had seen him, I would not have rolled my window down to find out what he wanted. I'd have backed out of the driveway, backed out of my own driveway, quite a ways, until I had created a lot of distance from this guy. And then I would have exited my vehicle with my hand pretty close to my firearm to find out what it is this turkey wants, who happens to be in my yard next to my car. Okay, so hopefully this was a good reminder for you. Have your gun. Even if you only own one gun, that's fine. If you only own one gun, they always say beware of the man who only has one gun, because he probably knows how to use it and use it very well. Please, folks, would you please carry? You know, I was recently, when we were up in South Dakota teaching Beyond Concealed Carry with Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast, you may have heard me on, I think it was either Ben Branham's show. I think it was on Ben Branham's show. You may have heard me talking with those guys and talking about carrying and things like that. You got to carry. Don't get lazy, folks. Please don't get lazy. Keep your firearm with you at all times. Okay? That's it. That's all I wanted to say. You may have some comments. You may have some things that you want to share with me, and that is fine. Please do so. With that said, I'm Bob Main. Thanks for listening to episode number 262 of, I'm sorry, what am I saying? Episode number 321. I was thinking about my other show. Episode 321 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Seen it happen, folks. Have a good one. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next time. Goodbye.